Hi, friends. Welcome back to another episode of Stress in the City. I'm going to tell you right at the gate, okay? Prepare to get uncomfortable this episode. Just prepare. I'm uncomfortable. When I think about this, when I start talking about it, my body just like shuts down. I just get sleepy. But it's been on my heart to talk about this, and it feels important. It feels timely. So we're going here. We're talking about emotional abuse this episode, and specifically what I want to tackle first about it is how confusing it can be. You know, years ago when I first started my healing journey and I was kind of, you know, buying books and listening to podcasts, and this was before I had decided to go to therapy, I was doing all this like personal development research, and I remember the day I sat in my office and I was on YouTube and I came across these videos about narcissism and attachment issues. And at that time, this was like deep on the other side of YouTube. This was all you got to do is type in like NAR, and now there are 100,000 videos that will pop up for narcissists. But that wasn't the case then. And I think it's actually a good thing that there is kind of this mainstream awareness that has been brought to relationship dynamics, and people are looking at themselves and people are looking at their relationships and saying, okay, this is what this is. What can I do about it? But I still think that when it comes to things like emotional abuse, when it comes to things like sexual abuse, there's still so much confusion and shame around the topic. And because it's something that can happen, you know, outside of a physical realm, there is almost this like it's not real thing. And it's frustrating. It's frustrating and it's confusing. Before we break this down further, though, I want to ask you something. I want you to really think about this. What's the worst thing that you can remember somebody saying to you? What's the thing, maybe it was said a long time ago, that left you questioning yourself, doubting yourself? Maybe it made you become insecure about something that you weren't insecure about until they said it. Maybe it happened in school. Somebody made fun of your hair or your clothes or your shoes. Maybe somebody made fun of you in front of your friends. Like, what's that thing? I've shared this in earlier episodes of my podcast, but it was comments from my grandfather about me being too fat that set me on a trajectory of having a poor relationship with my body for decades. Words hurt, don't they? And it can hurt for years. Something that someone says, if they get in just the right spot of your insecurity, it can change you. It can change your choices. It can change the way you view yourself. It can change the way you think of the world. Can emotions be abused? Yes. Yes. There is such a lack of awareness around just the fact that emotions can even be abused. Here is how emotional abuse is defined technically. Emotional abuse is a pattern of behavior that is designed to control, manipulate, and undermine the well-being and the self-worth of another person. It can involve a range of tactics such as humiliation, intimidation, name-calling, isolation, and gaslighting. It happens alongside physical abuse and sexual abuse, and that doesn't even fully define it. Now, I want you to imagine like those tactics: humiliation, intimidation, name calling, isolation, gaslighting, lying. Those are weapons in this dynamic. While there may not be an immediate physical component to the abuse, although there often is, usually where there's physical abuse, there's also emotional abuse. Usually where there's sexual abuse, there's also emotional abuse. But even in dynamics where there is no immediate physical component, there are absolutely physical symptoms that manifest from emotional abuse. It's no coincidence that in this type of scenario, you have digestive issues, you have sleep issues, you have migraines. There are even studies out that show a very relative link between autoimmunity and emotional abuse. So your body feels the stress of abuse in scenarios, even where there was no physical impact made. This is very real. If you don't know that, you may not be able to see it for what it is. I didn't. Speaking personally, I knew that there were serious issues in my relationship, but it wasn't until I found a domestic violence support group that educated me on what safe is supposed to look like and what safe is supposed to feel like that I realized I was even being abused myself. And I know that that sounds probably crazy to someone who has not been in this dynamic. So we're going to talk about cognitive dissonance next and how it actually affects your brain. But before I say that, I do want to say, if you're wondering if any of this applies to you, the book, Why Does He Do That? By Lundy Bancroft, which I'm actually planning on doing a breakdown episode on. This is an excellent eye-opening book to help you understand the mindset of men who abuse their partners. It helps you understand the dynamics that your community and society can play in perpetuating and protecting the abuser. And it is one of the clearest references that I would say breaks down the dynamics of emotional abuse in a way that is, you just can't avoid it when you read it. You just can't deny what you're seeing, what you're feeling, what you're experiencing when you read it. So if this is triggering for you, if you feel like this may be relative for you at all, I recommend that book. So anyway, what we're going to talk about now is cognitive dissonance and how it changes your brain. So what cognitive dissonance is it's basically a psychological stress that comes from holding two beliefs at the same time that conflict with each other. I remember when I was in choir growing up, and we would have songs that had dissonance in it, and it was like when the notes were side by side, they kind of clash in a way that it sounds totally different than harmony. And that's what happens in your brain. You have these two beliefs that don't match. And so you go between trying to believe both of them, and it just leaves you in a fog. And in the context of a relationship, that can look like having thoughts like, I love my partner, but they keep hurting me. Or I want to believe my partner. I want to believe they're telling the truth, but the stories just don't add up. The math is not mathing. These are what thoughts in a cognitive dissonance pattern would look like. There is a study done by Eddie Harmon Jones and Judson Mill, and the study showed that cognitive dissonance can cause an increase in activity in the brain's anterior cingulate cortex, or just call it the ACC. That area of the brain is involved in processing emotional and cognitive conflicts. And what they found in the study was that increased activity in this area of the brain can lead to feelings of discomfort, stress, anxiety, and it can actually change the structure of the brain. There was another study that I found that was done in 2009 where the researchers presented the participants with information that conflicted with their existing beliefs. And after they did that, they measured the changes in their brain activity in response to the conflicting information. They also found that cognitive dissonance leads to neural activity in the brain that can change your beliefs and your attitudes. And honestly, like, this is too. I could go on. If you do a search on PubMed for cognitive dissonance and brain, there's over 500 results. My point is this. This is well studied and well documented, and cognitive dissonance is a key ingredient in what makes emotional abuse difficult to recognize when it's happening to you. It literally changes the structure of your brain, which can change your thoughts, which can change your beliefs. It is like a virus that infects your mind and can make you think thoughts about yourself that benefit the abuser and hurt you. Another reason emotional abuse is confusing is because you feel bad for the abuser. Last episode, I talked about a spectrum of people pleasing. That's the way I kind of view it. And I recommend checking that episode out if you haven't. But to recap, I illustrated people pleasing as something that happens on a spectrum. So on the low end, you have people who don't conform to societal expectations at all. They don't have any concern or awareness about other people's feelings. Like, they are their own world. That's on one end of the spectrum. In the middle, you have a healthy amount of conforming to societal expectations, and conforming in that we're not talking about things that compromise your identity. We're talking about things like following laws, making reasonable accommodations, turning off your phone in a movie theater, those kind of things. And then on the high end of the spectrum, there's high conformity, and that's where you place other people's needs and expectations way above your own, even if it hurts you. That would look like, you know, pursuing a career that you hate because your parents think it's best for you, or staying in a relationship with someone because you feel guilty for leaving them, even if they are abusing you. So that's the spectrum, right? Now, in an abusive dynamic, you typically have people on opposite ends of the spectrum. You have the person that has little to no empathy, and you have the person that is very empathetic, overly empathetic, even in this case. So even when the abuser does something harmful to the empathetic partner, the empathetic partner still has the capacity to feel compassion for the abuser. So those thoughts can look like, he hits me because he was abused growing up. Or, you know, they're just really going through a tough time right now. I just need to be patient and understanding and supportive, and they'll come around. Or it can look like, you know, I know they've done this to me. I know they are mean to me. I know they neglect me, but I'm the only one that can help them. In other words, when you are skilled at being empathetic, because it is a skill, you're capable of recognizing the pain of other people, even in the middle of your own pain. And that is beautiful. That is a beautiful human quality. If the world were filled only with highly empathetic, attuned human beings, I feel like a lot of the problems we see today would just be eradicated. But in an abusive scenario, your empathy will drain the life out of you because you're pouring and pouring and pouring from yourself, and you get nothing back. Speaking from experience, it can be so difficult to hold on to your own feelings, even when your heart is broken, when you see someone else in pain. When you are so attuned to other people's feelings and energy and body language, when you see someone in pain, like, your pain just takes a back seat. This works the other way around too. When you are in this type of dynamic and so much manipulation has been installed in your mind, it can be very easy to also abandon your joy in the presence of somebody else's pain. I'm not allowed to feel happy because you're not happy. Or my happiness makes you unhappy, so I can't show it and I can't express it. Some of the weapons abusers use to control and to create that sense of guilt are shifting blame, making you the person that's always at fault for things that maybe you can't even control or not even are in your realm of control, gaslighting, denying and minimizing your reality, emotional blackmail, which is when a person threatens to hurt themselves or hurt someone or something that you love if you don't comply with their demands. The last thing I want to talk about is what you can do if this feels relevant for you, and what you can do if maybe it doesn't feel relevant for you, but it feels relevant for someone you know. If this was revealing or triggering to you and you believe you may be in an emotionally abusive relationship, friend, you are going to need support. Don't feel ashamed about needing help, and please try not to delay. I know it's hard, it's confusing, but you are not alone, and you are so much stronger than you might believe right now. Trust me, okay? My go-to resource has been btr.org. There is so much information that was really eye-opening and encouraging and empowering to me. There were so many podcast episodes where women had shared their stories and they mirrored mine to a T. There's a support group for women navigating abusive relationships, and I will link some of my favorite episodes in the show notes. The book I mentioned earlier, Why Does He Do That? By Lundy Bancroft, I can't recommend enough. It took me a year to get up the nerve to read that book, and it took me a while to get through it. But once I did, I really couldn't deny what I was seeing. And that helps with clearing up this mental fog and confusion that you can feel like you're in when you don't really know what version of reality is reality. So I recommend btr.org. I recommend Why Does He Do That? By Lundy Bancroft. I'll include all of that information in the show notes as a reference for you. Now, if you are not the person experience abuse and you're listening to this episode, and you think that someone that you love is being abused or is in a really toxic, unsafe scenario, here are some ways that you can support your friend, loved one, whoever. This is coming from research, but this is also coming from my experience of what I needed, what I got, what I didn't need, what wasn't helpful. First of all, educate yourself on what emotional abuse looks like using some of the resources that I mentioned. It is an experience that when you're in it, you don't know that you're in it. So when you are not in it, you don't necessarily know that it's happening. But there are some things that you can pay attention to, such as your friend or loved one, you know, there are changes in their behavior. Maybe they've become more withdrawn. They might appear to be on edge or easily irritated. They might start to have some sudden health issues. And listen to your gut. You know, if you have a gut instinct that something is not right, it may not be. So educate yourself. That's one. Two, and this is so important, let them know that you believe them and that they don't deserve to be treated that way. It might seem obvious, but it's not actually. And it's important for outside people to show, hey, I believe you. I understand you deserve better. You shouldn't be treated this way. Because emotional abuse is insidious. It doesn't leave physical evidence necessarily. So it can make it very difficult to recognize that you're experiencing it, and having your internal experience when you're confused about what you're experiencing, validated by an outside party, is very healing. You can help them to realize that the abuse is not imagined, that it's real, and that they're not alone. And that's so critical. Don't do this, okay? Blaming them for the abuse, trying to be neutral or see both sides. There's no neutrality to find in an abusive dynamic. The abuser is responsible for their behavior, not the person receiving the abuse. The last thing is encourage them to document everything that happens, whether that's keeping a journal, recording conversations, keeping a log of, you know, when, what happened and when. That's really, really useful. One, in case, you know, there's evidence that might be needed later for God knows what, when you're dealing with these kind of people, you honestly have no idea. But two, it also really helps them to realize that they're not imagining it and to be able to identify patterns. I'm so grateful that I have kept a journal for as long as I can remember, because I can see as I go back and I look through the things that I experienced and the things that I went through, I see a very, very clear pattern. And that was helpful for me to say, okay, this is not healthy. And this is not changing. So educate yourself, pay attention to their changes in behavior. Don't blame them and encourage them to keep track of what happens. Oof. This was an episode for me, y'all. This was a heavy episode to record. I have a lot of feelings that I am still processing about my own life. So what I'm going to do, and what I recommend you to do as well, is some self-care after this to reset my energy, and I may just take a nap. Who knows? If this felt heavy or triggering for you, I suggest you also find a way to take care of your energy and feelings today, too. I want to thank you for listening to another episode of Stress in the City. If you're enjoying Stress in the City, subscribe wherever your pods are casted. But even more importantly, if this was useful for you, if it could be useful or save somebody else, share it, okay? Please. All right? That's it for me. I'll talk to you next time.